Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Tuesday, May 18th. Before we start on our agenda, could we have a roll call of members?
Representative Levy.
Excused, and we look forward to her joining us shortly.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
I saw Representative Smith connecting.
Yep. I'm here, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. Thank you all for being here. We have several kinds of things on our agenda today. I'm going to take things in a slightly different order than the posted agenda. I'm going to start with a public hearing while we have people here to testify. After the public hearing, we will start on work sessions. I'm opening a public hearing on SCR 18. LRO, would you please introduce this for us?
Hello, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Chris Almanac, LRO. SCR 18 recognizes and honors Elfrida Bales for her service to the Department of Revenue and the state of Oregon.
Thank you. Committee members, any questions? Ready to go to the witness list? Okay. We have two people signed up to testify this afternoon. First is Marjorie Taylor.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Marjorie Taylor, Legislative Director for Revenue. And really, I brought our director, Betsy Imholt, with me to express our deepest appreciation to Elfrida Bales for her service to Oregon.
Good to see you. Thank you, Marjorie. Next, I'll call on Betsy Imholt.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Betsy Imholt, and I serve as director of the Oregon Department of Revenue. It's my honor to be with you today to testify in support of SCR 18. This is a measure to commemorate the remarkable 60-year work anniversary of our own Elfrida Bales. In February of this year, we officially celebrated Elfrida's 60th anniversary with the Oregon Department of Revenue, where she's a valued member of our team here, and she specifically is on a team that processes paper tax returns. Elfrida has been through every change that's been with the department, including different processes, buildings, computers, colleagues, and friends. In fact, her service here predates the department itself, working first for our predecessor, the Oregon Tax Commission. During Elfrida's first decade with the department, she met her husband here at work, and they later went on to have two children, and now one of them also works here with us at the Department of Revenue. Elfrida is the longest serving state employee on record in Oregon's history, which is amazing, but she is also so much more than that. She is what's best about public service. She works hard. She's unassuming. She shows up and doesn't ask to be recognized. In her career, she alone has hand-keyed millions of tax returns into the system in order for Oregonians to receive their refunds. She is the name and the face that represents so many public servants that make government work that nobody ever hears about. And she's a great team member, and very much loved by her colleagues. Elfrida told me that she treats every tax return like it's her own, and this is a commitment of hers that has never wavered. It's my honor to be here and just to ask you for your support for SCR 18. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Imholt. Committee members, any questions for the witnesses? I'm not seeing any. Thank you, both of you, for being here with us and presenting the Senate concurrent resolution to us. I want to mention that I read about Ms. Bales a couple of weeks ago. There was a major story in my local newspaper, front and center. It was a wonderful story with even just a touch more personal story to it. It was quite something to read that. Congratulations. Any other comments from the committee? Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also just wanted to express my appreciation for lifting up Alfreda's service. And just there's so many people who behind the scenes make our state government work. And often we pay attention to the legislators who get all the glory, but it's actually, I just really want to lift up the hard work and decades of service that so many of our employees, but particularly Ms. Alfreda has contributed over decades. So thank you so much.
If we were in a real hearing room, I think it's very likely we may have stood up and applauded. And we can't do that today in this setting. But, you know, with technology, we have these things where you can show a hand waving or hands clapping. And I'm going to clap my hands for a couple seconds here. Thank you to Alfreda and to all of the employees at Department of Revenue. Thank you, Alfreda, for your service. Anything else before I close the public hearing? I'm closing the public hearing. I'd like to do a work session now, and Representative Levy is going to join us as soon as she can. However, she's not here. I'd like to go ahead and do a work session on this bill, and we'll ask the committee if you are willing to suspend the rules later in the meeting when she is with us to allow her to vote if she would like to vote on this bill. I'm opening a work session on SCR 18. And we just heard it, so I don't think LRO has to describe it again. Committee members, any questions for LRO on SCR 18? Not seeing anything. Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Marsh.
I didn't ask for the motion. This is Rep. Pham's motion.
Yes, Chair Nathanson, I move SCR 18 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Pham moves SCR 18 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion now? I was just so eager to get to this. Any discussion? Now I'll ask for the vote.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke gives an enthusiastic aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. Thank you. We'll need a carrier for this bill.
Madam Chair, this is Rep. Smith as the co-chair of the subcommittee with the Department of Revenue. I'd love to carry this with you.
That would be great. Okay, we'll have co-carriers on this one. Thank you. I'm closing the work session on SCR 18. Now let's move back to the top of the posted agenda. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2781.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2781, in its base form, authorizes a county court, upon request of tax collector and district attorney, to order tax collector to cancel specific property taxes. There's a dash two, which replaces the bill, and this would cancel the property taxes on two specific ports based on the qualifications in the bill. And those two specific ports are the port of Coos Bay and Tillamook County. And essentially what we've had is that in the case of Coos Bay since 1991, there's been uncollectible property taxes after a contract with the Coast Guard, which have now accrued to around $25,000. And in the case of Tillamook County, there's a similar circumstance stemming from different originating circumstances, but the property taxes have been uncollectible from the port in the amount of, have now accrued to the amount of $50,000. This would just, the dash two narrowed the focus of the bill that so that it would affect these two specific ports.
Thank you. Committee members, any questions for LRO or for anyone else? I believe we probably do have someone in the room with us who helped to draft the amendment that was at my request to make sure that this was narrow.
Madam Chair, Mark Landauer.
I don't need you to, let's wait to see if we have any questions. Thanks. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yeah, that was just my question, was the dash two seems to limit this bill to the two ports. Is that correct? Mr. Landauer or Ms. McGovern, whoever could answer that question, would be great.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Landauer. Sorry for interrupting. Please do clarify.
No, quite all right. Madam Chair and members of the committee, Mark Landauer, I'm the executive director of the Oregon Public Ports Association. Representative Reschke, you are correct. Oregon has 23 public ports. And subsection 1 of Section 1 deals with the port of Coos Bay. Subsection 2 of the Dash 2 amendment addressed more broadly than we had hoped the situation in the port of Tillamook Bay. However, since the hearing, we discovered through discussions with Lincoln County that that language would in fact sweep in a couple of properties at the port of Newport. Mm-hmm. As a result, we entertained and had further discussions. And if you look at the Dash 2 amendment, line 11, it says, owned by a port without a working waterfront. The port of Tillamook Bay is the only landlocked port in the state of Oregon, despite the name, the port of Tillamook Bay. So as a result, we were able to distinguish between all the other ports and Tillamook Bay by adding those few words to make it very surgical and only apply to the port of Tillamook Bay. I hope that that answers your question.
Thank you, it does.
And Mr. Landauer, I'll ask a follow-up. Does the bill still address the original problem? That the problem, as I understood it, was originally very limited in scope.
Well, Madam Chair and members of the committee, originally our intent was to get at a larger problem. And that problem is being able to cancel real property taxes that have become uncollectible. However, in the course of our discussions with the assessors and with the counties, it became very clear that there were concerns with that approach. As a result, we drew up the Dash 1 amendment with the intent of only applying it to the Port of Coos Bay and the Port of Tillamook. However, due to those subsequent conversations with Lincoln County, we had to make that further modification to subsection 2 in order to apply it only to the Port of Tillamook Bay.
Thanks. Committee members, any other questions? And if not questions, discussion on the bill, what the bill is doing, the amendment. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. We're considering the Dash 2 amendment, which we're not considering the Dash 1. Is that correct?
That's what, yes, that's my hope.
Okay, very good. Are you ready for a motion then?
Yeah, I'm not seeing any other hands up. Yeah.
Very good. Chair Nathanson, I move the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2781.
Vice Chair Reschke moves the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2781. Is there any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Rep Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. The amendment is now in the bill.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2781 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 2781 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The fact that Representative Levy is not with us yet, that we could suspend the rules maybe later when she arrives and then let her cast her vote, that'd be appreciated.
Yep, very happy to do that. And I've discussed it with Rep Levy in advance. So she anticipates we'll have a bit of process. Yep, good. I'd like to thank everybody, Mr. Landauer is one. There were a couple other people who were involved in looking into this and having additional conversations with port or special district staff. Thank everybody who probably didn't realize how many more words, how many more conversations, and how many more emails and processes it would take to complete this one item. Glad it got done, and thank you for your efforts. Not seeing any other hands raised, let's have a vote.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. The carrier will be the chief sponsor on the bill. That is Representative David Brock Smith. I don't see any other business on this bill. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2781. I'm opening a work session now for discussion purposes only on House Bill 3143.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, good afternoon. House Bill 3143, the base bill, would adjust the interest computation on delinquent property taxes to daily rather than monthly. And then there were some additional processes there. There's a dash one, which replaces the bill. And so instead of a daily computation of delinquent interest on delinquent taxes, it essentially moves. I think we may all be familiar with the one-third system that our property taxes are due in. This would take that first deadline and just move it out 1 month for the first one-third portion. And so there's a delay of the onset of this interest accrual for delinquent property taxes in the dash one.
Thank you. Committee, any questions for Ms. McGovern or anyone else? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. McGovern, just so I'm clear, I'm going to repeat back what I heard, and then you can tell me whether I got it right or not, or correct me. So basically, we're just the original concept was to calculate daily interest, and we heard that that might be expensive for the county. So the solution proposed here is to just not charge interest for the first month that you're delinquent, and then monthly interest thereafter. Is that correct?
Yes. Representative Reschke, Chair Nathanson, that's absolutely correct. We're just starting the clock a month later, and so nothing would occur if you were, say, 10 days late.
And to keep it really simple for me, building on what Representative Reschke has just asked, that means after the first month, if you're 2 days late in the second month, you're still going to get charged a full month interest. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. And Chair Nathanson, I'll also add on top of that, the other one-third payments would then, those are unchanged. It's just that first month that there's the delay.
Thank you. It is my understanding from the sponsor of the bill, Representative Noss, that this is satisfactory. And in fact, the amendment has Representative Noss's name on it. Committee members, any other questions? Maybe some discussion? Since this was a different approach, I scheduled this for a work session for discussion purposes only, so you could hear about it. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a comment on this bill and the process just in general, that oftentimes as legislators, we have an idea to fix a problem. And if somebody else has a different idea or sees problems with it. And so then there's not compromise necessarily, but kind of a coming together of minds of a third way or a fourth way to address the same problem. And that's kind of what we see here with this particular bill. So I'm glad to see it. It's nice when it works that way.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else with a question or a comment before we close this work session? I'm not Representative Valderrama.
Yes, thank you, Chair Nathanson. I guess and I apologize, I think I might be having some issues with my camera, so apologize about that. But I think that I am I'm slightly concerned about the potential for a monthly charge on the second month, or excuse me, for the whole month, if that's how it is currently drafted. But I appreciate the flag that the amendment came directly from Representative Nose, and I also was able to connect with him about it as well. But just wanted to flag that. That's, I think, slightly different than I think what was the original issue proposed to us. So I appreciate the opportunity just to have a conversation about it today, since that's a new solution than, you know, what some of the other things that we were talking about in terms of potential prorating or things like that. So thank you.
Representative Valderrama, we do have someone in the room with us who helped craft the, well, actually, who was the brainchild behind crafting this alternative approach. Would you like to ask a question, like what was the problem with the original proposal and how is this better? We have time if you would like to call that person up.
Yes, actually, that would be helpful. I would appreciate that.
Okay, let's do that. Mr. Cancellor, you're with us.
I am, Madam Chair.
Did you get to hear the preceding comments?
I did, and for the record, Eric Cancellor, representing county assessors and tax collectors. There's a couple comments that I could make about the origin of this solution and the nature of the problem that we had with the original bill. The current practice right now is to calculate and account for delinquent interest on a monthly basis. The original bill had proposed to do all of that on a daily basis. So, you know, the original concern was, if someone is a day late, should they really be accruing an entire month's of interest? And, you know, from a fairness perspective, that's a really good question, and one that sort of begs a conversation about a solution. The original problem for us would be that while it's not difficult to calculate daily interest, it would require pretty major programming changes and begged a lot of other policy questions. So as you may recall, we expressed those concerns in a public hearing earlier this session and put our heads together with Representative Nose to see if we couldn't come up with another way of addressing that fundamental mismatch of, you know, if you're late, and especially in November, because you're getting your tax bill in October. So you could imagine, especially in light of the year that we've had, maybe someone has so much going on that they're a day late. Why are they getting hit with a month of interest? So the solution there, as Ms. McGovern described, was for the November 15th deadline only, and not for the February or May deadlines, that there would be a grace period. We wouldn't change the payment deadline, but we would change the day on which the interest would start to accrue. So you basically have a month where you don't pay any interest at all if you're late. Then if you're late by a month and a day, you pay 1 month interest. So that's the nature of the solution. I think having described that, I'd ask if you have any other questions about that. And then also your question about potential other alternative solutions might bear repeating.
Representative?
Yes, thank you, Chair Nathanson. That's very helpful. Thank you for that information. I guess I would be curious if you can share a little bit more about, again, if the goal that you mentioned was around fairness, how the landing of still a month and a day meets that goal, and then the other alternatives that I am interested in particularly are around prorating, and if we, let's say, already know, for an example, what the total monthly cost would be, is there a way that that could be prorated just for that one day, let's say, or whatever the time frame is of a late payment, so that that would be a little less of an impact?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Valderrama, that is the proration is an interesting question. I am aware that there had been some interest in looking into that a number of weeks ago, raised the issue with Representative Nose, and at the time he said, well, I think we've got a solution with this first month grace period. Let's just go with that. So it's not something that we explored in more depth in terms of how difficult would it be to reprogram the systems to accomplish that goal. If that is still of interest to the committee and understanding what that would entail, then that is something we could look into very quickly and report back to you on. I recognize that there is a little bit of clunkiness. There's some efficiencies and some clunkiness at the same time in doing it on a monthly basis. There definitely is an equitability if you're doing it on a daily basis, where every day that you are late, if you can, you know, quantify how many days, and then you can prorate and you charge that person exactly that many days of late interest. So I certainly understand the policy basis behind that. We would have to talk about that some more and determine whether or not, purely from a programming and administrative perspective, that could be done and what that would entail. But we would be happy to do that if that's your desire.
Thank you. I think that is something that I personally am interested in. I don't know where the rest of the committee is, but I appreciate the information and I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else to raise from the committee on House Bill 3143 before I close this work session? Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have a question about just now that people get a month more, is there a process that county assessors go through to reach out to people to let them know, hey, you might have missed this, you might have, amidst everything going on, you might have missed this deadline? You know, are there steps to just avoid people even reaching that second month deadline? And can you explain to us what those strategies are?
Madam Chair, Representative Pham, that's an excellent question. And of course, education is and outreach is always one of the key elements of helping to ensure that our regulatory systems work effectively. One of the considerations that we made in drafting this amendment with Representative Nose was not putting an aggressive effective date on it for that very reason. We want to make sure that, so if this were to pass as is, there's no emergency, obviously there can't be an emergency clause because it's a revenue issue, but we declined to do a 91 days after signing diet would become effective January 1st of 2022, which would give the assessors, tax collectors, and the Department of Revenue ample opportunity to review and make sure that all of our brochures and our public outreach and information reflected that with time to spare. And that also gives us time to highlight the fact that there was not just, you know, relay the information accurately, but to highlight that a change has been made. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
I actually was thinking of more targeted, because I actually would want to avoid confusing people by actually publicly changing the date, because I think that can actually confuse people more about when, you know, when they actually, if they're late from the new deadline versus the old. I just meant after people have passed the deadline, what are the efforts to target just those people who are late filers to make sure that they can avoid, if it was just an oversight, but they do have the ability to pay, can we just target those people who are past the deadline to then make sure that they get it in within the next month before they have to pay a penalty?
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, I have to imagine, although I'll have to check with the Department of Revenue as the oversight agency and then with my client on exactly what the current procedure is, because I know there is a late notification procedure, but I don't know off the top of my head what that is. And that's something that isn't dictated by statute. That's going to be determined through rulemaking and general guidance. And frankly, it's something we could evaluate in terms of adequacy, whether or not this legislation passes. So I'd be more than happy to look into that and offer those details. And if there is additional consideration or interest from the legislature in terms of ensuring that that's effective in getting people informed and on time, we can certainly have that conversation.
That would be great. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I think we've gotten around to all of the points that we need to raise for this one. And Rep. Pham, I want to tell you that I really appreciate it when my public library sends me an email notice 4 or 5 days before my book is due to remind me. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3143. Representative Levy has joined us now. I'm going to ask Mr. Alanak, I can't remember the exact words, something about asking if the committee will suspend the rules to allow Representative Levy to vote on SCR 18 and House Bill 2781. Did my words satisfy the requirements?
I think they did, Madam Chair. They conveyed the question. Now you just need a response from your members.
Okay. And because we're in this remote environment, I guess I'm officially asking you if you will agree to suspend the rules. So we better have a roll call vote to see if we can vote.
Representative
Marsh? Yeah. Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Rushkie?
I had to jump out, and so I missed the very beginning of this discussion. This is for House Bill 3143, correct?
This is to let Representative Levy vote. Are you willing to suspend the rules?
Yes, aye. Yes, go. Yes.
Yes. Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Yay, Representative Levy, welcome back.
Thank you.
How do you vote on Senate Concurrent Resolution 18?
I vote yes.
And how do you vote on House Bill 2781?
My first question is which amendment did you guys vote on, the dash two or the dash one?
Dash two.
Okay, I vote yes on the dash two then, and I vote yes on the amendment. Is that correct to vote
that
way?
Great. That's okay. Great.
Thank you very much. And thank you, committee, for allowing me to vote.
Glad you're with us. And now we're ready to resume with the agenda. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2247A.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, House Bill 2247A would authorize counties to adopt an ordinance or resolution authorizing the waiver of interest charges, delinquent business, real property taxes for business property owners who are current as of February 15, 2020. And these are specifically in the bill. There's sideboards that, one, those businesses had to be current as of February 15, 2020. And then there's additional language that would say that the inability to pay those property taxes were directly due to the effects of COVID and the emergency orders or the 2020 wildfires. And there's language around that. This measure is permissive, so there's no direct revenue impact. It's up to the local governing bodies.
Okay. Any committee members, any questions for Ms. McGovern? Discussion then. We are in a work session on House Bill 2247A. I'll wait just a bit to see if any members want to raise a hand or otherwise shout out that you'd like to be recognized. I'm not seeing any requests for discussion on 2247A.
Would you like a motion, Madam Chair?
Yeah, let's take a motion, please.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2247A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 2247A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I'm not seeing any. Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. This bill is moving to the floor. And the carrier will be the chief sponsor, Representative Bossart Davis. I think we're finished with our business on this bill, 2247A. I'm closing the work session then on House Bill 2247A. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2343A.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, again, we have another property tax bill, 2343A. Again, it is permissive in nature, so that would permit the governing body of an enterprise zone sponsor to adopt a resolution to suspend obligations of participating firm and allow them to continue to receive property tax exemptions. The dash three narrows and is a little more clarifying and specific around the language of the reporting requirements, what the alternative requirements for that firm would be, and then it also provides for refunds of taxes already collected on non-compliance of enterprise zone requirements during this period if the bill were to pass and then the participants were able to satisfy the new requirements under this bill.
Thank you. The committee, there is the dash A3 amendment. And there, I very much appreciate that some stakeholders participated in working together to craft an amendment. Legislative Council is in the room with us, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Dale, one of the questions has to do with how specific and tight is the language about the requirement of being linked to the impact of COVID-19 on the economy, the business environment, and so forth. So does the language in the amendment require that the reason for lifting the employment requirement is directly linked to the COVID-19 pandemic?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Alan Dale, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel. And I would say, yes, the link between COVID and these factors justifying the actions in the bill is very close. Would you like me to elaborate?
Sure. Yeah. I think the committee members should hear it. Yeah. Thank you.
So the language appears on pages, on page one, starting at line 19 through line 5 on page 2. That has to do with the program in section 2. And then the same language appears with respect to the program in section 3. On page 3, lines 14 through 21. And so the question, as I was asked it, had to do with other factors attributable to COVID-19. So the resolution has to establish criteria for connecting the economic situation of the business firm to COVID-19. And there is a list that includes regulatory actions by the state with respect to COVID-19, and then some sort of economic consequences, the decrease in receipts, reduction in sales, disruption of access to markets or supply chains. And then, so those I think are all clearly linked to COVID-19. Then there's the final one, the catch-all, other factors attributable to the COVID-19 pandemic. And the concern that was raised to me is that tight enough? And so the thing I would point out is the words other factors attributable. So under the definition of attribute that the Oregon Supreme Court uses, saying that it's the factors are attributable to COVID-19 means that COVID-19 caused the factors or brought them about, or that the factors occur as a consequence of COVID-19. So that, on the one hand, I think that's as very tight, but also the word other. What that means, coming at the end of a list, I think the court is going to say that other factors attributable at the end of, you know, at the end of a list of five, they have to be equally attributable as the factors in A through E. So it's whatever they come up with under F has to fit in that list of A through E in kind and degree, I would say.
In kind and degree. Thank you very much, Mr. Dale.
Sure.
Committee members, any questions for LRO or Legislative Council? I'm not seeing any right now. Discussion prior to a motion? Otherwise, we can start with a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move the dash A3 amendment to House Bill 2343A.
Vice Chair Reschke moves the dash A3 amendment to House Bill 2343A. Is there discussion on this amendment? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Dale, I just want to say thank you for your description there. Line F, I guess it's line 5, parentheses F, had me question what other attributable factors meant, and you described it very well, so I appreciate that. I learned something today, so thank you.
Any other discussion on the motion, which is to adopt the amendment? I'm not seeing any hands. Let's have a roll call vote on this motion.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. We've adopted the amendment. Committee, we're back to the motion on the bill now as amended. Any discussion?
Would you like a motion, Madam Chair? Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2343A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 2343A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on this motion. Roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. And for now, I'm assigning the carrier to be Representative Lively. That appears to complete our work on House Bill 2343A. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2343A. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 3275A.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3275A is a property tax exemption for property that is burdened by a affordable housing covenant for both the land and the improvements, in this case, condominiums. And there is a dash three that clarifies the terms of the covenant, which would specify that it's 99 years at minimum for affordable housing and provides 7 years for construction and rehabilitation with the potential for a 3-year renewal. It changes the real market value property tax exemption to an assessed value property tax exemption. The land is exempt, and the improvements, which would be the homes built on this, would be 27% exempt. And this also creates an annual reporting process. As this is, you know, a property tax exemption program that is in this bill for properties and a certain type of program, this sort of leasehold program with the 99-year covenant that doesn't exist so far, there would be a revenue reduction in property taxes, but it's not known the magnitude because these haven't been built or adopted yet.
Thank you. Committee members, any questions for Ms. McGovern? Representative Levy.
Not sure if my question is for Ms. McGovern or who. Does this allow counties to not do this? Or is it mandatory that if they have affordable housing, they have to do this?
Representative Levy, Chair Nathanson, this is not permissive, but it only applies to the specific types of properties that are in this bill, so not sort of the historical affordable housing programs that we have otherwhere in the state, which are apartments or other nonprofit affordable housing programs. So this is specific to this land that is owned underneath, and then the leaseholds on top are the actual units are owned by the individual homeowners, but not the land, as part of an affordable housing solution. So that's kind of the distinction. It's narrowed to that type, but it's not permissive.
Can I please have additional question to clarify some more?
Oh, sure. Yes.
So then if they build affordable condominiums and they're owner occupied, is my understanding that they get a 27% decrease in their taxes if they're owner occupied in this affordable housing project? Or am I reading that wrong?
Representative Levy, Chair Nathanson. So it would have to satisfy all the components that are in this bill for it to be exempt. But in terms of the design of the bill, I know Rep. Pham has sponsored this bill, and she would also be able to answer more questions about the targets or intended participants.
Thank you, Rep. Pham. Can you answer that question?
Yes, thank you so much, Chair Nathanson and Rep. Levy. Just to be clear, it's not any kind of affordable rental or apartments. It would have to be a very specific. There's about 20 units across the state, and then I think Proud Ground has. They're here to express, but it's like maybe 60 or under 100 units that specifically have this. What it's called a shared equity or limited equity model, and so it wouldn't apply to all affordable rent homeownership units, but just particularly the ones that have a 99-year covenant and are using a shared equity model, where there's a land trust that owns the land, and then the condos are owned separately.
Okay, I understand that now. I may have one more question, but I have to formulate it, so I'll come back. Thank you.
That's quite all right. We do have some time still for discussing this bill. Let's make sure we get all the questions and responses. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. McGovern, the dash A3, is this an amendment that you would characterize that tightens the language or the scope of the bill, or does it, what does the A3 do compared to the base bill?
Representative Reschke, Chair Nathanson, there's a few things. Yes, I would characterize that some components of the amendment were tightening the participation in language. One of the components is the 99-year affordable covenant term. And then the reporting process is also enhanced or tightened in the A3. And in addition, we have some clawback language for a 5-year property tax clawback if a property isn't satisfying these components. So those are the parts of the bill that strengthen the tightness around the participants, the reporting, and the financial implications for the counties.
Thank you for that. A follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. So Ms. McGovern, I see in the revenue impact statement, most of the revenue, quote, lost or expended on this would be at the county level, not the state level. Is that correct? And if so, do we have any kind of idea what that cost is going to be to counties?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke, That's absolutely correct. They are local. Property taxes are local, so counties, cities, and local governments are affected. The scope of properties that would fit these specific conditions are not identified, or have these properties have not been built. So with the enhanced language of the A3 and the 99-year covenant, we haven't found that there's a large number of properties that satisfy all of the requirements in the A3, so that those dollar amounts are unknown yet at this point.
Thank you, Ms. McGovern. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure. There is someone available with us this afternoon to provide a little more detail, if you would like it, about what this type of housing is about, how, as Rep. Pham had described, it's a limited type of program, a limited type of housing availability, rather than just what might be popularly called workforce housing or affordable housing. It's quite specific. Depending on what the next questions are, I may call on that person to respond. Representative Levy.
I'll hold my question until, if you have further comments from the other person, that might answer my question. So okay. I'll hold my question till they're done commenting.
Okay. Rep. Pham, did you have something before we invite Ms. Lynn to explain some more for us?
Sure. I just wanted to give some context as the chief sponsor about the problem that this bill is trying to solve. We know that, of course, we invest in affordable rental housing, but we actually, as a state, don't have a very dearth of affordable home ownership opportunities. Once families, after staying in rental housing for many years, they start to get to a place where of stability, which we're hoping to get them to, where they can't, there are not enough affordable home ownership opportunities, a chance for them to build equity. The problem is if people just participate in the market, then we lose another, even if we subsidize a home for one family, as soon as they sell it 7 years later, if it appreciates like normal, it gets lost. And so that's why it's important to have these shared equity models where they do get a small percentage of equity, so they do get to gather wealth. But then because they have this affordability covenant that limits how much equity they can ultimately, it's not going to be a windfall profit for them, but it will keep the housing affordable. So the land will remain in trust, owned by a nonprofit, but this house that they own or this condo is something that they own, they get to gain some value on. And so that's the problem that I was trying to solve by really trying to support this land trust model of home ownership and being able to give some incentives, recognizing that when somebody buys a home in this kind of land trust model, they don't get the benefits that most homeowners get when they buy. They're not going to benefit from the appreciation of the land. They're not going to be able to benefit from a market rate appreciation. They're going to accept some limited equity and then leave the house affordable to the next person, the next home, aspiring homeowning family. So that's, I guess I just wanted to make sure we set that context of the goals and the problem that this bill is attempting to solve before we go into the technical details.
And Rep. Pham, I'd like to add my own short little spin on this. It's a step beyond picturing yourself only as a renter for your entire life, either renting an apartment or renting a house. This is that next step beyond simply renting, which doesn't allow to build any equity at all. This at least allows something to help lift yourself and your family up. It's that next step beyond a simple rental.
May I respond? Thank you. Exactly, yeah. Rep. Chair Nathanson. I think we need to invest in the whole continuum of housing. Of course, we need supports for people who are houseless and rentals, but we also need to support the entire continuum, including allowing families to gain some of the benefits from home ownership. That's such an important way to build wealth, get out of poverty, and by not offering, by only focusing on rentals, but not offering enough in home ownership opportunities, we're really closing out a crucial wealth building tool for many Oregon families.
Thank you. Ms. Lynn, is there something that you could add in three or four minutes to help illuminate us on how this works?
Thank you, Chair Nathanson and the committee, and thanks to the extraordinary leadership of Rep. Fawn in this whole process. And she just did a great job of describing how important the community land trust and shared equity is to working towards achieving much more balance. We've had a huge issue. Most of you know that the racial disparity in home ownership for working families, for Black, Indigenous, people of color, there's a huge gap there. And our program and our partners all around the state are really targeting getting families into these homes. And they're really just like every other homeowner. The difference is, technically, they don't own the land because we brought public resources and private resources in to purchase that land and hold it in the community land trust to keep their, to make the house really affordable for them. And it's working extraordinarily well. The other thing I was going to add at this juncture is that we've already established a good working relationship with Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington County, and they're already applying this discount, or technically it's an exemption, to the land that these owners actually don't own. So we call it fair taxation to equity, shared equity homeowners. There's just a couple counties around the state that have really looked to the state to apply the gold standard and establish a codification of the practice in the three large counties. So this is a bill to really kind of shore up the practice. We've been working with the county assessors throughout the process. Department of Revenue has been helpful, and I think the amendments really cap the tightening of the bill in terms of the technicalities, and we would so appreciate your support.
Thank you. Representative Levy.
I thank you, Chair. So thank you very much, Rep. Pham, for explaining this better to me. After you said all that, I'm actually pretty familiar with this. They do this in Seal Beach, California. And I went to, my children live down there, my oldest son. And we were looking for something that we could afford to live down there because it's really expensive to live anywhere in Southern California because of the tax rates down there. And that was one of the places that our real estate lady took us to. But obviously, when we're both working, you don't qualify for that kind of stuff. So we ended up not buying anything. But they do that in numerous places in Southern California to allow people to be able to purchase a home. I don't know what the percentage of tax is. I don't know any of the rest of it, but so now I understand it. So thank you very much.
Additional questions or committee discussion? Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to appreciate Rep. Pham for bringing this forward. I think looking innovatively and integrating the tax structure and tax incentives with different kinds of housing. She's had a couple of bills now that have done that, and that's what we need to be doing. We need to be really expanding our ideas of what housing looks like and how it can be provided, and then figuring out ways to use the tools that are available to us in the tax structure to encourage and support that. So many thanks to Rep. Pham for that.
One of the things that most interests me about this is taken from one of Rep. Pham's comments a few minutes ago. We put an awful lot of public money, subsidy, into affordable housing. But sometimes it really makes me wonder, after a little bit of time, after that first owner, it could be just a year or two before they get another job somewhere, move either to another place in Oregon or even move out of state. And so then what becomes of that unit that we helped through our public actions and grants or discounts or whatever other ways we were financially supporting the project? Maybe it's no longer affordable. And I think that should give us a pause as well to figure out how to keep our efforts supporting workforce housing or housing for people just starting to build equity, just starting out. Representative Levy.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Something you said brought back another question for me. So if I were to qualify for this home, and I can think plenty of people I know that would really welcome this type of home ownership, when they get ready to sell the home to the next person, and usually when you own your own home, you have pride of ownership, or you try, but people that are low income can't afford to do a lot of upkeep. So how do you factor that into the possibility that they've received this tax exemption for this home, but yet they haven't been able to do the upkeep on the home, and then the next owner that comes in loses the property, sells for less than what you would hope it would sell for, because in a normal home structure, you're in a home of it grows in value. But depending on how it's taken care of, it may not grow in value. Instead, it may become less valuable. Is that factored into this?
I will allow a minute or two response, and then we do need to watch the clock and either complete our work session or carry this over to the next meeting. Ms. Lynn or Rep. Pham, do you have a response for Rep. Levy?
I'll let Ms. Lynn answer.
Thank you so much, Rep. Pham. Rep. Levy and the committee, we have in the program that's targeting families at 60% of median income, and those are working families all over the state of Oregon. Make 25% of the increased value in the home over the course of time they own that home. So they have a stake in keeping the unit of housing in very good condition. We also partner with them. We make sure the home's in good condition when it's purchased in the beginning, and then we work with them to provide some supports for home repair if they need that. We have a stewardship fund to assist them. And in our experience with over 375 homes in our portfolio right now, resales are coming in 10 years with as much as $90,000 of equity for the family. They get every penny they paid in their mortgage principal back out again, and 25% of the increased value. Really have a stake in that home, and we have a wonderful a history of passing, then providing that home to the next income qualified family. The Habitat partnership works a little bit different, but Habitat refurbishes all homes for the next buyer without exception.
Chair Nathanson, one more question and then I'm done.
Just a moment. Ms. Lynn, would you please state your name for the record again?
Of course. Diane Lynn. I am Executive Director of Proud Ground.
Thank you very much. Rep. Levy.
So this is a tax exemption that the counties have to bear. And what is the average tax exemption as related to, you said, 375 homes? And that's a tax loss to the county, or is it lost to the cities that have decided that they would do it? I mean, how do they account for that tax loss?
Yeah. As a former elected official at the county level, I understand your question thoroughly and very conscious of the exemption and the impact on all the taxing organizations. We did do a calculation early on, happy to provide that to you, that broke down. And remember, the three largest counties were 90% of the land trust homes are already in. They've already absorbed that impact. And really, 27% is a really small modicum of impact. In Lincoln County, where there might be 10 homes, it's just it's not a perceptible impact on county government in terms of the loss of revenue.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And thank you, Chair Nathanson, for indulging me.
Sure. Glad we were able to have a good discussion and have responses from both Rep. Pham and Ms. Lynn. We have just a few minutes before we need to adjourn. Rep. Pham, are you prepared to make a motion?
Yes, Chair Nathanson, I move the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 3275A.
Vice Chair Pham moves the Dash A3 amendment to House Bill 3275A. Is there discussion on the amendment? On this motion?
I just have one question.
Sure. Sorry
to interrupt.
Yes.
Dash 3, am I clear, replaces the bill? Did I hear that right? Somewhere I thought I saw that, unless I'm...
Ms. McGovern?
Or does it become... Yeah, I'm not clear.
I'm not sure. Maybe Jamie's having a technical issue. I believe it is a gut stuff. And if you look at the Dash A3 on line 3, you can see...
That helped my voting. Thank you very much.
So, Chair Nathanson, this is Rep. Smith.
Yes.
So, I feel very comfortable providing a courtesy yes vote, but I do want to just share with everyone on the House floor. I'm gonna have to take a little time between now and the time it hits the floor to evaluate my position. But I will be a courtesy yes today.
Thank you, Rep. Smith, for letting us know. Anything else? Let's have a roll call vote on this motion, which is to move the amendment.
Representative Levy?
Yes, on the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Sorry about that. Sorry. Representative Smith votes aye.
Thank you.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Rushki?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. Next motion, please, Rep. Pham.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 3275A as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Pham moves House Bill 3275A as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion on this motion. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the work that Representative Pham has done on this and kind of carving out or trying to carve out a new world or a new way of home ownership. At this time, I'm just uncomfortable with the unknowns on the cost to counties or where this goes. So I'm going to vote no on the base bill today, not because I don't think it's a great idea or not that I'm against the idea in total, but I don't know enough to give it my yes vote today. So I'm not asking anybody to join me on the committee, but just wanted to flag that ahead of time and look forward to seeing where this goes.
Thank you, Rep. Reschke. Representative Levy.
Well, I'm basically the same as Rep. Reschke, and we did not talk before, but I would like to go back and talk to my counties. When do you think this will go to the floor?
After we send it, it's moving through pretty quickly. I don't have a good prediction, but maybe just a few days.
Or maybe by Thursday or maybe Monday, are you thinking?
Well, we have
really sincerely like to have the opportunity to talk to the counties that I represent to see how they feel about this.
I'm guessing that this might start to move, be reported out to the speaker's desk tomorrow, I'm thinking. Chris, is that about how quickly it will move?
Madam Chair, we have a couple of days. The bill is being amended, so we have a couple of days to get the paperwork together before we would, what we call dropping it at the speaker's desk.
Okay, and then it takes, it would go through a second reading before it gets to the third reading. So you have a few days.
That gives me plenty of time then. So I'll be a courtesy yes on this until I talk to my counties. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for asking, and I'm sorry I didn't have a more specific answer, but you have a few
days. That's a really good answer. Really good answer. I can make that happen before it gets to the floor.
Are we ready for a vote? Let's have the vote.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Rushkey?
Rushkey votes no.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. The carrier will be Representative Pham.
I would be honored, thank you.
Any other business on this before I close this work session? I think we got that done. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3275A. Mr. Alanak, anything else to advise us before we adjourn the meeting?
No, Madam Chair, you've completed your agenda. And then I guess I'll just remind folks that if you're going to do that about tomorrow's meeting.
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, the revenue forecast will be released tomorrow. So that's the only agenda item. You're meeting at the regular time, 3:15. It's a little different in this virtual environment, but the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee will be joining you.
They'll be in the virtual room with us. Okay. Representative Rushkey, did you have a comment?
I was just going to make the comment that Mr. Alanak made, but he did it better and before me, so he wins.
Thank you all. See you tomorrow. We're adjourned.